Good number present. We appreciate the presence of everyone and hope you've got your Bible with you and eager to study with us as we talk about things that have to do with serving God and going to heaven in the after while. Tomorrow night we'll wind our studies up by talking about the wayward son comes home, a study from Luke 15. We'll talk about the prodigal coming home, and the question is, what brought him back home? What caused him to return? That'll be our question for our study tomorrow evening. But I encourage you to get a Bible and turn to Genesis 37 as our beginning point this evening. We've been talking about how that we would talk about Joseph tonight. And in Genesis 37, we're introduced at verse 2 to Joseph at the age of 17 as the favored son of Jacob. And that's our introduction to him. Well, we go on through Genesis 37 and we see that his brothers envied him according to verse 11. And they wanted to kill him at verse 18. But not only that, I notice that they sold him in verse 28. And then we come on down. I want you to notice in verse 36 that the Midianites who bought him brought him on down to Potiphar, brought him down to Egypt. At verse 36 of chapter 37, the Midianites had sold him in Egypt to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh and a captain of the guard. So that's how he ended up in Pharaoh's household. Well, in chapter 39 now, let's skip chapter 38 and come to chapter 39. And beginning at verse 1, I want us to read verses 1 through 6. That Joseph rose in power and he brought blessing to Potiphar's house. Beginning at verse 1, Joseph had been taken down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, a captain of the guard, an Egyptian bought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him down there. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a successful man. And he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. So Joseph found favor in his sight and served him. And then he made him overseer of his house, and all that he had he put in his hand. And so it was from time to time that he made him the overseer of the house, and all that he had the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake, and the blessing of the Lord was all on all that was in his house and in the field. And so he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except the bread that he ate. And Joseph was handsome in form and in appearance. And so what I learned is he rose in power and he brought great blessing to the household of Potiphar because of God being with Joseph. But I want you to notice, beginning at verse 7 now, that Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him. And so I want to talk about the seduction of Joseph, beginning at verse 7, and I want to take the time to read verses 7 to 23, the end of the chapter. Because that's where we're going to spend our time analyzing the things we find in this chapter. So if you don't already have your Bible open, turn to Genesis 39. Let's start at verse 7 now. We've already looked at verses 1 through 6. And let's read the account of Joseph being seduced by Potiphar's wife. Let's start now at verse 7. Came to pass that after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, lie with me. But he refused, and he said to his master's wife, look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has into my hand. And there is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How can then I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And so it was that as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. But it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do the work that none of the men of the house was inside. And she caught him by the garment and said, lie with me. But he left his garment in her hand, and he fled, and he ran outside. And so it was that when she saw that he left his garment in her hand and fled outside, that she called to the men of the house and spoke to them, saying, see, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us. And he came in to me to lie with me, and I cried out with a loud voice. It happened that when he heard that I lifted my voice and cried out, that he left his garment with me and fled and went outside. And she kept his garment with her until the master came home, and she spoke to him with words like these, saying, the Hebrew servant whom you brought into us to came into me to mock me. And so it happened as I lifted my voice and cried out that he left his garment with me and he fled outside. And so it was that when his master heard these words, which is why I spoke to him, saying, your master did after this manner, that his anger was aroused. Then Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever they did there, it was his doing. And the keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's hand, because the Lord was with him, and whatever he did, the Lord made it to prosper. I want you to notice, as we talk about the seduction of Joseph, I want you to notice three things that we just saw in that story. I noticed that she seduced him, first of all. Secondly, he resisted her. And thirdly, there were some results that followed after that. Those are the three things I want us to talk about in our study tonight. But I want us to begin with this. I want us to talk about the temptation was strong. And I want to paint before you a picture tonight of how strong this temptation was. That this was not a case where Joseph was slightly tempted by Potiphar's wife. That she might have cast her eyes at him just a little bit, and that was a slight temptation, but he was able to say no to that and walk on. But I want to paint for you a picture tonight that his temptation was strong, and oh, was it strong. And let's talk about how we know it was strong. Well, first of all, I know it was strong when I consider his youth. Consider how young he was. Now, when we're introduced to Joseph in Genesis 37, you might turn back there with me. Genesis 37 and in verse 2, that we're introduced to him at the age of about 17 years of age. Well, you know that as the story ended in Genesis 39, he'd been cast into prison. So let's go over to chapter 41, drop down to verse 46, and the text tells us at verse 46 that Joseph was 30 years old at this juncture. But now go back to chapter 41 in verse 1, he'd been in prison for 2 years. That put him back about 28. So that tells me that his age was somewhere between about 18 and 28 years of age. This was a period of time when temptation would have been strong. Paul warned Timothy about fleeing youthful lust. There are some lusts and desires that are true for those who are younger and stronger perhaps in their youth than it is in older years. And so we're talking about a young man when perhaps those desires would have been at their keenest. A time when he might have been burning with desire. A time when the desire may have been the strongest. That's what Paul talked about in 1 Corinthians 7 and in verse 9. It is better to marry than to burn with desire, he said. And so when I look at the fact that he was a man of his youth, he wasn't an old man. He wasn't such a young boy that this wouldn't have been an interest to him. But he was of the age of somewhere between 18 and 28 years of age when those desires may have been at their keenest. And she begins to seduce him. That tells me the temptation was strong. And here's a very practical thing I learned from that. That there are young people that have faith and they have principle and they have some morals about them like Joseph. We sell our young people out sometimes by a blanket statement that young people are not as moral as they used to be. Or people are not interested in spiritual things. But we have young people among us, and perhaps many here tonight, that have the same kind of principle that Joseph did, same kind of faith that he did, and they'll have the same kind of resistance that he did. But he was a man of his youth. But here's the second thing I want you to notice. The temptation was strong, and oh, was it strong. When I consider the fact that it was she that solicited him, and not he seducing her. It wasn't a matter of him coming to her, and beginning to play his cards with her to try to see what she's willing to do. But it was she seducing him. I want you to notice with me at verse 7. Look at verse 7. The text says, it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph. The New American Standard Version says that she looked with desire at Joseph. The New International, or a Living Bible paraphrase rather, says she began making eyes at Joseph. She could flirt with her eyes and say more with her eyes than she can with her lips. Turn to Proverbs with me, if you will. As you turn to the book of Proverbs, let me remind you that Proverbs chapters 5, 6, and 7 go together as a unit of chapters warning about the problem of immorality. Both premarital and extramarital relationships. Remember those three chapters. Chapters 5, 6, and 7. The warning of those chapters is not only that it's wrong and don't do it, but how one is easily led into that. And I want you to notice 6 and verse 25. Do not lust after her beauty in your heart, nor let her allure you with her eyelids. She can cast her eyes and she can say more with her eyes than she can with her lips. And she began making eyes at Joseph. And you consider the fact that she's seducing him, or it may mean, as some commentators have suggested, that she set her eye on Joseph, meaning she set her eye on him and made him a target, and I'm going to break him down and he is going to succumb to my temptation. In either case, or maybe a compilation of both of those, may be the idea that she cast her eyes on him and she is seducing him. Oh, the temptation was strong, wasn't it? Wasn't it strong? When you consider how young he was, and consider the fact that she was soliciting him, thirdly, the temptation was strong when I consider the fact that she told him, here's how far I'm willing to go. What she said was that she wasn't flirting. She's not toying only to turn out to be a tease. She's not having fun with him, and then when he says, you know what, I think I'm interested. And then she backs off. But here's what she said. Look at verse 7. She said, come lie with me. Here's how far I'm willing to go. She's not saying, I want to flirt with you. I want to have a little fun with you. But I don't want to go too far. She's saying, here's how far I'm willing to go. Come lie with me. And I'm here to suggest to you there'd be very few young men in that corrupt nation of Egypt that could have resisted that kind of temptation. You think of the immoralities rampant through the nation of Egypt. There would be very few young men that could have said no to that. Oh, think about how strong the temptation was. Look at how young he was. She was soliciting him, and consider the fact that she says, here's how far I'm willing to go. I'm letting you know ahead of time, this is how far I'm willing to go, but that's not all. The temptation was strong when I consider the repetition thereof. The repetition of it. Now what do we mean by that? Well, I want to suggest to you that resisting the first instance of temptation is not all that hard. In fact, that might be easy at times. That here is the first moment of temptation, you can say no. And maybe you're tempted again and you can say no. Then you might succumb to the temptation. For example, Eve, we talked about Eve last night. She resisted at first, didn't she? When Satan presented the opportunity before, didn't she say, we're not to eat of that tree because God said that in the day that we eat of it, we'll surely die? Didn't she resist at first? And then she finally caved. What about Samson? Didn't he resist Delilah? Judges 16. And didn't he resist her again? And didn't he resist her again? And then finally he caved under pressure. But here is a case I want you to notice with me at verse 10. That this wasn't a one-time thing. Go back to Genesis 39 and verse 10. This wasn't just a one-time thing where she came by and she talked with him and she flirted with him and he said no and she left him alone. But I want you to notice at verse 10 that so it was that as she spoke to Joseph day by day, this was a continual thing. She flirted with Joseph on this day, and the next day she would flirt with Joseph, and the next day she would flirt with Joseph, and the next day she would cast her eyes at him, and this was a continual pressure. Let's go back to the book of Proverbs, if you will, and look at this from Satan's point of view. From Satan's point of view, this is designed to wear him down. And that's why I said resisting at first may not be all that hard. But as time goes on, you begin to wear, it begins to wear, it begins to tear on you, and maybe you're going to cave. Look at Proverbs 6 and in verse 26. Remember, this is about the harlot and how to avoid the pitfalls of the harlot. For by means of a harlot, a man is reduced to a crust of bread. In other words, she wears and she tears, and from Satan's point of view, it's designed to wear him down until finally he succumbs to the pressure. Oh, the temptation was strong, wasn't it? Look at how strong it was. When you consider his youth, and you consider that she was soliciting him, and furthermore, she told him, here's how far I'm willing to go, and she did this day by day by day. There's one more thing I want you to notice about how strong it was. And that is the fact that now there was a convenient opportunity. The fact that one could easily get caught serves as a deterrent, doesn't it? A thief, if he saw something that he wanted to steal and he saw that there are people standing around and he could easily get caught, that might deter him from that. Or he looks around and he sees cameras all around, that I might get caught doing the very act I might be discouraged from doing my crime. But here was an occasion where he might not get caught, because I want you to notice at verse 11. Here now we have the convenient opportunity. No one else is around. Look at verse 11. The master is gone and no one else is around. It happened about this time that when Joseph went into the house to do his work, that none of the men of the house was inside. The master's gone. None of those who would normally be in the house were there. They're all alone. And she caught him by the garment, saying, "Lie with me." That wasn't the first time she'd said that. That wasn't the first time. But now there is the convenient opportunity. And what I want to suggest to you, that being alone when no one else is around just increases the pressure. Let's go back to the book of Proverbs again. Turn over to the book of Proverbs in chapter 7. We've looked at chapter 6. Let's go to the 7th division of Proverbs. Still talking about the warning against the harlot. In Proverbs 7, verses 19 and 20, the woman runs out to the young man and she says to him, "For my husband is not at home. He's gone on a long journey." Well, don't you think we might get caught? Don't you think he might come in and he'll catch us? Oh no, oh no, oh no. Look at verse 20. "He's gone on a long journey and took a bag of money with him." He took his traveler's checks with him. Yeah, he's got everything ready for a trip. And besides that, look at verse 20. "And he said he'll come home on an appointed day. He said he won't be back for 2 weeks. And he took a bag of money with him, suggesting he's going to be gone for a while. And now that he's gone and we won't get caught, our time is right." And what I'm suggesting to you is, when no one else is around, here is the convenient opportunity. And here's a warning of that. There is a danger of being alone with one of the opposite sex when no one else is around. When you're in a parked car and no one else is around, or you're in a house, or you're in an apartment, and no one else is around, not a soul, and you're there for a good while, your temptation is going to increase. All the temptation was strong for Joseph, wasn't it? What made it so strong? Well, I want you to consider the fact that he was a young man when those temptations would have been at their keenest. And it was she that was soliciting him, not he soliciting her. She says, "Here's how far I'm willing to go." And there was the day-by-day repetition of that. And now the opportunity has presented itself where they can do that very thing that she's been begging him to do. But equal to the strength of that temptation, I want to suggest to you that the resistance was firm. The temptation was strong, but the resistance was firm. That is, Joseph stood to that temptation and he resisted. And how did he do so? Well, here's the first thing I want you to notice. That he resisted with words. And that's not all he did. But he had quite a bit to say. In fact, there were 5 things he had to say. Let's see what they were. First of all, he said no. And he meant it. We get back at Genesis chapter 39 and in verse 8. Verse 8 said, "But he..." You're reading with me now? You might underline. "But he refused." What does that mean? It means he said no. "No, I'm not going to do that." When she says, "Come lie with me," verse 7, he refused, the text said. Look at verse 10. "And so it was that as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her." He resisted with words. What's the first thing he said? He said no. Some in this audience are too young to remember, but back during the Reagan administration, when Nancy Reagan launched her campaign of "Just Say No to Drugs," she was criticized for that because that's too simple. You can't just say no to drugs. There's got to be more to that than just saying no to drugs. "Just Say No" was the slogan in the campaign. And I wondered then, as I wonder now with reference to any sin, what's wrong with just saying no? To drunkenness? To drugs? To stealing? To lying? To cursing? And to fornication? Joseph said, "No, I'm not going to do that." But that's not all he said. He spoke in verse 8 of trust. Notice at verse 8 he said, he refused and he said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house and has committed all that he has into my hand." In other words, my master trusts me. He trusts me to do the right thing. He trusts me to handle all things properly, and that includes how I handle you. My master trusts me. I cannot betray that trust. I want to tell you, young folks, your parents trust you when you're out on a date. They trust you to behave yourself. Husbands, your wife trusts you. They have confidence in you. Wives, your husband are trusting you to do the right thing and behave yourself. Parents, your children are trusting you to behave yourself. Someone has confidence in you. And so Joseph said no. And secondly, he spoke of the trust that he had. Here's the third thing. He recalled the sacredness of marriage. Look at verse 9. He said, there is no one in this house greater than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. In other words, my master said, I could have anything, I could touch anything, I could handle anything there is, except for you. You're the exception. Why is she the exception? Because you are his wife. He spoke of the sacredness of marriage. You're a married woman. No, I'm not going to do this with you because you're a married woman. And I'm not going to betray that. He spoke of the sacredness of marriage. That's not all. Here's the fourth thing he said. He called it wickedness. It's evil. It's immoral. Look at this at verse 9. He said, how can I do this great wickedness? This is immoral. This is wrong. But that's not all. Notice the fifth thing he said. He called it a sin against God. How can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? I want you to notice that it was not just that she was a married woman. It was not just that it would be breaking the marriage vows. It's not just that she would be violating her vows. It's not just that it would be untrue to the one they love and they'd be unfaithful, but it was a sin against God. Sometimes when someone commits a sin of adultery, we're more upset about the fact they have betrayed their marriage vows than we are the fact they sinned against God. He said, this is a sin against God. That's what's wrong with it. And so he resisted with words. And what did he say about that? He said, no, my master, trust me, you are a married woman. This is immoral and it is a sin against God. I can't do that. But that's not all he did. I want to suggest to you that he resisted with deeds. In other words, he put some actions to his words. Look, beginning at verse 10. He resisted with deeds. How so? Well, I want you to notice at verse 10 that he refused to be with her. We often talk about how that he fled and he ran outside. We'll come to that in a moment. But I want you to notice at verse 10, there's something else he did. And so it was that as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her. Now, are you reading with me? Or to be with her. You see that phrase? Or to be with her. The New International translates that, or even be with her. Now, we already know he refused to lie with her. He said, no, I'm not going to do that. But he went further than that. He refused to be with her, or even to be with her. The Living Bible translates it, he kept out of her way as much as possible. In other words, he tried to avoid her. He understood the danger of association, didn't he? He recognized that if I hang around, and I hang around, and I keep hanging around, and I spend time with her, I could easily be led to commit this sin of fornication. So he avoids her as much as he can. He understood the principle of Proverbs 5. Remember those three chapters? Proverbs 5 and verse 8 says, do not go near the door of her house. Remember that? Don't get close to her. Avoid her. Go the other direction. So Joseph resisted with deeds because he even refused to be with her. He tried to keep out of her way as much as possible. If he saw her coming in, he went out. If he saw her going that way, he went the other way. If he saw her coming, he'd leave. He tried to stay away from her as much as possible because he recognized, that's a temptation to me. But that's not all. I want you to notice in verse 12, he resisted with deeds, but not only refusing to be with her, but verse 12 says he fled and he ran outside. Notice verse 12. Then she caught him by the garment and saying, lie with me, but he left his garment in her hand and he fled and he ran outside. Literally he did that. That's not a figurative expression. He literally fled and he ran outside. Left the garment in her hand and he fled and he ran outside, the text says. He removed himself from the temptation. He's practicing what he'd been doing at verse 10. Yes, she caught him, but he's going to get away from her as much as he can. And he fled and he ran outside. His actions showed that his words were real. Remember him saying, "No, you're a married woman. My master, trust me. This is wickedness. This is sin against God." When he fled and he ran outside, that shows that his words were real. And I want to tell you something. That may mean that you have to leave the car or the house or the apartment or the room and literally run somewhere else. Isn't that be embarrassing? Out on a date and I jump up and I run off. Wouldn't it be far more less embarrassing to jump out of the car and run and go call mom and dad to come and get you? Or run out of the apartment or run out of the house? Than to have to acknowledge to them and to everybody else, I have committed the sin of fornication. And maybe now even we have a child out of wedlock. Literally, it may mean you have to run outside. Joseph did. But I want to tell you something else about how he resisted. His resistance was firm. Yes, the temptation was strong, but the resistance was firm. Because he resisted with words, he resisted with deeds, and he resisted promptly. He resisted without the slightest hesitation. I see that in verse 8 and in verse 12. He resisted without any dallying with the temptation. Joseph didn't seem to be the kind of man that, "Well, I want to stay. Is she really mean? Come lie with me, or is she just teasing me? I wanted to see how far. Let me just see how far she goes, and then I'll run and leave." Oh, he resisted promptly. He was no waiting to see how far this may go. Not only did he resist promptly, but he resisted firmly. Remember verse 8? He refused. There was no wavering. There was no indecision. There was no pushing aside something that he secretly wanted to do. He said no, and he meant no. And I'm here to tell you tonight, all the temptation was strong. But equal to that, the resistance was firm. How so? You remember he resisted with words. Remember the five things he said? He said, "No, my master, trust me. My master, trust me. You're a married woman. This is immoral, and this is a sin against God." And then he resisted with deeds. He stayed away from her as much as possible, and then he fled and he ran outside, and he resisted promptly, and he resisted firmly. But here's the third thing. The temptation was strong. The resistance was firm. And the results were clear. When Joseph gets out on the other side, remember he fled and ran outside, remember that? Now he's on the outside now. And things have suddenly changed. When Joseph finally gets to the outside, he can look back and see with greater clarity three things that he may have seen before, but he sees them clearer now than he's ever seen before. Joseph may have understood some of these principles. But if he didn't understand before, he understands them now. Because he can see with greater clarity some things that he's never seen before. Like what? Well, here's the first thing. He now sees the difference in love and lust. Joseph may have known that before, but I know he knows it now. You see, this woman lusted for him and she did not love him at all. When she's coming to Joseph and she says, "Come lie with me." That is not love, that is lust. Let me give you evidence of that. Let's start at verse 14 of Genesis 39. You remember her lying? She lied about Joseph and made every effort to destroy Joseph, which shows she doesn't care a thing about Joseph. She was only lusting after him. Look at verse 14. She called him into the house. Remember, we all know, and she knows that she was the one seducing him. But here's what the story is told. Look at verse 14. She called him into the house and she spoke to them saying, "See, he has brought into us a Hebrew to mock us, and he came in to lie with me. And I cried out with a loud voice." You know what she's saying? "He tried to rape me. That's what he did. And if I hadn't screamed and hollered and grabbed his coat, he would have done that. And so my husband has brought in this Hebrew to mock us." Look at verse 17. When the husband came home, She said the same kind of words, that Hebrew that you brought into us. And so it happened that as I lifted, he came in to mock me, and he tried to rape me what she sang, and I cried out with a loud voice. And if I hadn't screamed and hollered, he would have got away with it. Oh, look what he did to me. She's lying through her teeth about him. The evidence that she doesn't love him is the fact she lied and tried to destroy him. She doesn't love him at all. Pulpit correctly said, but indeed all illicit passion, whether gratified or balked, has a tendency sooner or later to be transformed into hate. I say amen. I want to suggest to you that one who lusts after you does not necessarily love you. Listen to that, young folks, particularly young ladies. I want you to think about that. A young boy that lusts after you, and it's obvious he's lusting after you, he doesn't necessarily love you. He might not understand what love is. Lust seeks gratification, like this woman. Love cares about the person. She didn't care a thing about Joseph. She tried to destroy Joseph. He spent 2 years in prison based on her lie. She didn't care about him. And I don't know if he saw it before, but he sees it now. Joseph can look back and he sees the difference in love and lust like he's never seen it before. Joseph knows the difference now. But that's not all. Joseph gets outside and he looks back and he sees some things he lost. He left some things inside. You remember that? The most obvious was his garment. What? You remember that? She left the garment. He left the garment in her hand. And he fled and he ran outside. But that's not all he left. There's something else he left in there. He left his job. He had quite a prestigious job, didn't he? And look at verse 20. Joseph's master took him and put him in prison. He lost his job. He left it inside. That job's over now. There's something else he lost. He lost his freedom. He left that inside. Because from this point, at least for the next 2 years, he's in prison. He left it inside. And I want to tell you, he left his standing and his approval among men inside. How so? Go back to verse 14, Genesis 39. You remember this woman telling all the men of the house? Let me tell you what just happened with this Joseph. This man had been working right, he tried to rape me. Tells her husband. And anyone who inquires, where's Joseph? He's in prison. Why? Because of what he tried to do to his wife. He lost his standing and his approval among men. I'll tell you, there's something to learn from that. You may lose because if you say, no, I'm not going to do that. You may lose your boyfriend. You may lose your girlfriend. You may lose your status and your standing among your friends. But so be it. So be it. That boyfriend may dump you because you're not willing to cave to the pressure. That girlfriend may dump you because you don't do what everybody else is doing. Your friends may ridicule you for that. Joseph can look back and say, you know what, I lost some things. I ran out of that house and I ran rather quickly. I left a garment, I left a job, I left my freedom, and I left my reputation among some of the people. And it all stayed inside. But I came out. But I said there were three things he could see. And Joseph can now look back and he sees what he kept. Do you know he brought some stuff with him? We don't talk much about what he brought with him. We talk about him leaving his coat, but he brought some stuff with him. Some important stuff. Like what? He brought his purity out with him, didn't he? He brought that out. He could have left that inside because she was begging day by day, come lie with me. He brought that purity out with him. He still has his purity. He brought his honor with him. Proverbs 6, remember those three chapters, 5, 6, and 7. Proverbs 6 says, the one who submits to the sin of fornication, wounds and dishonor will he get. Joseph brought his honor with him. He was able to bring that out. He ran rather quickly, but he brought that with him. Brought his purity out with him. He brought his honor out with him. And he brought his conscience with him. Verses 8, verse 10, verse 12. Tell me his conscience said, I can't do this. And he kept his conscience. He knew what was right, and he brought his conscience out with him. I'll tell you something else he brought with him. He kept his reputation among the godly, didn't he? Beginning at verse 14, I noticed that there were some who began to buy into that, and he lost his reputation among some of the men. But what he brought out with him was his reputation among the godly. The evidence of that, we're talking about him tonight, aren't we? And this isn't the first time you've studied about Joseph, is it? He's quite notable. We prayed about him a moment ago. We already knew what the story was about Joseph. Quite a notable character among the godly. He brought that reputation out with him. And I want to tell you, he kept his relationship with God. Turn with me to verses 21 to 23. Remember him being cast into prison, verse 20? When he got into the prison, the Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy, and he gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners who were in the prison. And whatever they did there was his doing, and the keeper of the prison did not look into anything that was under Joseph's hand because the Lord was with him. What I'm trying to suggest to you is he kept his relationship with God. He brought that out with him. Had he submitted to her request, he would have left his relationship with God, his reputation among the godly, his conscience and his honor and his purity all inside. But he brought all that out. And that's of far more value than that job and his freedom and that coat he left inside. There are three things he sees with greater clarity. The results are clear. What are they? There's a difference in love and lust. He can see what he left and he see what he kept. And there may come a time that you begin to see the difference in love and lust, and you may have to flee and run outside. And when you get outside, you may have to say, you know what? I just lost some things. I just lost a boyfriend. I just lost a girlfriend. And I know they're going to ridicule me. School for what I just did. But I kept my honor. I kept my purity. I kept my conscience. I kept my relationship with God. What have we seen in our study tonight? The seduction of Joseph. The temptation was strong. The resistance was firm. And the results were clear. When I first started preaching a number of years ago, I would begin to wonder, why do I need to preach on stuff like stealing, drunkenness, fornication? To a congregation, because everybody here knows that's wrong. Everybody knows that's wrong. It took me a little while to realize that you need to preach on those kinds of things, no matter who's in the audience. And so why do I preach on either this particular lesson or one similar to this nearly everywhere I go in meetings? I'm going to tell you why. There was a survey made a number of years ago among college students. This goes back several years. Across the land, of all the universities across the land, about the percentage of those who committed fornication who were in college, and I don't remember what the numbers were, but it was a pretty high percentage of college students who committed the sin of fornication. So some of the, and I put in quotations, brethren decided that they would look at how that compared to the schools among brethren, such as Lipscomb over here and Freed Hardeman and Harding and various schools. And they found the number to be significantly lower than the national average in the universities. And in that pursuit, they began to raise questions of why is it lower and why do you not commit the sin of fornication? And there were varied answers. Some said they were afraid of pregnancy. Others afraid of venereal disease. Others said that they were influenced by their parents and their what they said and what they did. Some said by Bible class teachers. Some said their peers were not doing that and that helped them. Number one answer. Surprising. Pulpit preaching and teaching on the subject. And so why do I deal with a sermon like this in a meeting? It's because that somewhere down the line, it may be 10 years down the line, it may be 20 years, some of these young folks may realize, you know, I don't remember who the preacher was and don't even know where he was from, but he preached on Joseph. And that helped me to stay pure, and I remember that principle. Our time will be well spent if that happens. Maybe some older person who is tempted to have an affair, and they may not remember that old preacher's name, but seemed like he said something about Joseph, how his resistance was firm. And if that is accomplished, our time is well spent. There may be one or more present this evening who's not a Christian, who's not a child of God. Would you come believing that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of the living God? Would you repent of your sins, acknowledge your faith, and be buried in the waters of baptism for the remission of sins? If you're a subject, would you come while we stand and sing?